Hey, everybody. Scott Johnson here from CORE. And you may be wondering, gee, Scott, where's the normal episode this week? And the answer is we went to BlizzCon. John and I did anyway. Did some interviews and also got another interview along with the one John and I did with the Rally Point guys. So two heroes interviews for the price of one right here on the feed. And I'm going to put it in here now for you to listen to. Keep in mind, some of this is like weird microphone in a room with a lot of background noise. Some of it's a little better than that. Tried to tweak it here and there to make sure the levels were good, but you get the idea. Room on the, you know, a big empty room and a recorder on a table, and you hope for the best. But a lot of really interesting stuff came out of this, especially I think the esports interview. But if you're into design and heroes, generally speaking, the art and the kind of, I don't know, back end of heroes, you're going to love the interview we did, John and I. So check it out. I hope you guys enjoy it. We'll be back next Tuesday with a normal show, all the usual goofiness and fun times and discussion, as well as hopefully, I don't know, maybe Varian Wrynn will be out by then. We'll have to see. Anyway, without further ado, here it is.
Hi, I'm Sam Didier, art director for Heroes of Storm.
And I'm John Hodgson, the tech designer for Heroes of Storm.
So let me go ahead and start by asking, when you're doing a design and you're getting the chance to go back and revisit iconic characters, what is the best part of that and what is the most challenging part of that? You know, we've seen it now with Ragnaros. Obviously, he looks very different. How is that approach when you're going to take on an iconic character like that?
So on the art end, luckily, Blizzard has been around for a while, and we've had, literally for some of the characters, almost 25 years worth of designs that we can go back to, like Lost Vikings. We didn't really have to go, you know, concepting too much. We knew what they looked like. So take example for Varian and Ragnaros. They've been around now for, you know, Ragnaros especially, for a long time, and he's had, you know, probably three or four different interpretations of what he's looked like across games, across different games. So what we do on the Heroes team artistically is if there's a character that has a lot of representation already that people relate to, we try to take the things that are the most relatable, that people will recognize, that people will understand and go, oh yeah, he had that in, you know, the Hearthstone version. Oh, he had that in the Warcraft version. We'll try to blend those together and sort of get the Heroes version of Ragnaros. Same with Varian. You know, he, of course, very iconic looking, but with our version, we actually just made him, I don't know, I guess he doesn't feel as weathered as the World of Warcraft one. There have been a couple interpretations of him that we had in Warcraft, so we tried to take each of those and sort of blend them together to get the Heroes of the Storm Varian.
And on the mechanical gameplay side, It's a lot of the same thing. We are looking at what players might perceive that hero to be, what their previous gameplay experiences have been in those older games. So, you know, for Ragnaros, for example, we knew that players would expect a big epic fight. We knew we expected a lot of power, player crushing power, right?
Yeah.
And so the entire design process for Ragnaros is very challenging because, you know, you have to reconcile that kind of power and what Ragnaros does with what the demands of the game are.
Right.
Like, you can't have something that just one-shots everybody. It just wouldn't be fair. It'd be epic.
Die!
Well, you could, but you might get feedback on that.
Exactly.
It's balanced. Each side can have him.
and by the same token, you can't have him just immediately die to a ton of Jainas. Like, he would have probably died back in Vanilla WoW. So, Ragnaros's development was not rocky exactly, but is very interesting in the amount of iterations that we went through to get that character feeling right in the hands of the players and thinking, well, we really want him to take over a building. Like, can we get him to take over the core? If we did that, then he kind of just sits in the back for a long time. You're not really doing anything.
Right.
That's not fun. So we were like, well, maybe he can send out one of his Sons of Flame or Majordomo Executus and you can play as that until they get to the core. And then people were complaining, well, that's not Ragnaros. That's just a little dork.
Who's this guy?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't this the guy that got smooshed?
Yeah, exactly. And so we finally arrived on our current version of Ragnaros that you can play down on the show floor today, which is he is a more palatable size of Ragnaros. He's still pretty big as he's moving around on the playing field. He certainly hits like a truck.
Yeah.
And then when he has this big epic molten core ability, his trait to take over an allied town or a destroyed structure, ally or enemy. That's when you really get the full Ragnaros experience, and it's fun because it's a tactical moment in the game. When you use that ability, is very important from an attack and a defense perspective, but also it gives that big fantasy hit that we're really looking for.
Right,
absolutely. We're able to make them bigger too.
Yes,
that was because we were, you know, art always wants to make them bigger. So yeah. That was one where it was allowed.
And we saw it, too, in the trailer when you see, you know, it was kind of this moment where you see the little Ragnaros scooting around, and you could kind of hear people laughing a little bit, like, oh, look at the little Ragnaros scooting around, and then he hits that moment where he just pops up and gets real big, and you heard everybody go, oh, because that's him.
Part of the art, not physical art, but the, you know, the ability is to be a game artist or a game designer. Of course, we want to make them huge.
Yeah.
Then now the game's not playable. So if people out there, they go, we want him bigger, and then you make him bigger, it's like, everyone, it sucks, he's too big. It's like, well, you know, this is where we find the... No problem.
Sorry, I'm like,
hey, you're wearing a hard sweatshirt, it's all good.
It's all right, man. Sam, it's nice to meet you.
You too, man. Yeah. This is John.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. I didn't know it was going to be you.
This is me.
The fire wave taking out an entire lane.
Yeah.
I got to try that.
Dude, isn't that awesome?
It is incredibly satisfying.
And then there's the talent where you can get... Two
fire waves.
That's what, 20?
Actually, I had a question about that. Is he technically specialist then? Because I haven't heard yet. Is that his classification?
We just thought him as assassin, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Because I heard lane clear, and I heard I'll take over a tower, and I thought, well, that sounds pretty utilitarian.
You could play him more like a specialist if you want, right?
Yeah, all
right. You could definitely focus him on pushing and map control, but other talents will push him more into that assassin category.
Nice.
Well, I think one of the big questions that we've heard is... Are there any plans to ever go back and revisit the art on some of the previous heroes? We've all had the tease from Reddit of the Brightwing, where everybody kind of said, oh, I wish that had happened, it looks so good. But we've also heard people saying, you know, any chance Tychus is going to get his cigar back? Any chance we're going to see updates for some of these older models? Is that something your team is interested in or looking at, or is it just new heroes tend to take up the bulk of the focus?
Well, as an artist, of course, we always want to go back and, like, tweak what we can. But there's also an issue where we had redone a murky.
Yeah.
And people didn't like it. Right? And people, you know, buy these things, and now they bought something, now they don't like it. They like the one they had. They don't like the new one. So it's very delicate because it's like, yeah, well, some people will like it. Some people won't. You know, someone, you touched my sacred flower and I don't like this. It's not a sacred flower. It's a stupid weed. Right? So it's been easier to sort of just focus on creating the new heroes. And then we still would love to do something with the older ones. Like, to me, Arthas is a little bit stubby. But some people like how he is.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't want to sit there. It's like when I'm not going to name a movie. The name of the movie, but when a certain popular movie came out with certain new additions to it, certain people didn't like it. And, you know, some people might have liked it, but I think most people didn't. And I'm not saying that that's what our game is like, but I would hate to, you know, change the fantasies for some people and now they don't like what they've grown accustomed to and loved.
Do more and more skins sort of solve that problem, do you feel like?
Yeah, see, the skins are an area where if we want to, like, say, for example, well, to go back to the Tychus cigar thing,
you asked
cigar,
that question, awesome.
Yeah, is, well, the game is a 12-plus game.
Yeah.
I don't think we're allowed to have things like smoking, alcohol, things like that, and even blood, I think we have a little bit on one of the cleavers of the butcher or something, but there's like no blood in the game. Same with the smoking, same with like even things like Lily has like, what is it, the healing brew or healing elixir. It's not like beer, you know, like, or Chen, I mean, I'm sorry.
Chen
and Lily both have their kind of concoction, their soda pop, whatever.
Right, the old SNES translation of pop or soda.
Yeah. So there's certain parameters that we have to work in due to the nature of the game as well. You know, in regular StarCraft, of course, the cigar, all that's all fine. But, you know, we have to kind of, aside from fixing old stuff, that's a delicate one because some people like the old art. And the things like, you know, the cigars and the beer, it's like, well, I love beer, but if we can't have it in here, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, besides, canonically, it fell in the suit, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a voiceover where he dropped it in the suit. And
so, still there, technically.
Yeah.
So you can make that argument.
Still burning to this day.
Oh, Tychus in his suit.
It's in his infested Tychus
suit. You guys, I'm very curious, just sticking with skins for a second, when you come up with something great like the volleyball outfit for Li Ming or some of these, you know, more creative takes on what is normally kind of a very fantasy-driven character, and now suddenly you're making them relatable in a whole new way we never planned on. What's that process like? Are you just throwing ideas out? You have a big list of stuff you hope to do, you want to do, and then you just kind of pick the cream of the crop?
Who's the fan of 80s cartoons that are really just nailing it on a consistent basis?
Super Sonya.
It's just this handsome, hairy guy on the team. We don't need to name names.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Heard tale.
the art question there, it really depends. Like, we would have never probably done the Asmo dunk.
Mm.
The fans really, really championed it, but we never thought that it was really appropriate until it was like a Heroes of the Dorm event. Okay, college March Madness sort of thing. It's sports. Let's do it. We did the same with the Li Ming. That was for the Olympics.
Right.
Where normally we probably wouldn't just throw out a sports themed thing unless there's something to, you know, like had we timed it right, maybe we would have done something with a Cubs or Indians skin. You know, with one of the heroes maybe. A lot of the sort of out there ideas. The out there ones are the ones that most people suggest.
Yeah.
It's just finding the ones that actually can work, because while something is funny now, the development process, by the time, you know, the hero is designed and then the skins and all that, it's like 5 months later. Is that even popular anymore? You know, like had we done something like Ham on the Core when that first got popular and it comes out 5 months later, everyone's like, what the hell is that?
Or, you know, if you had, say, Big League Leoric hit right now, he'd be hot.
Yeah.
But who's going to really be interested in baseball in a couple of months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because is it because the only one that swings a sword that wears thing
that
way? Probably.
Thing came
why.
To mind when I thought
actually,
baseball.
From an engineering standpoint, I've wondered this before. When an art team and the modeling team or whatever come and say, all right, here's a hot new skin for whoever, for Arthas. Arthas has had plenty of attention. Do you ever go, whoa, slow down, that's going to eliminate 10% of our user base, like way too much new geometry, it's going to slow these PCs down that are in this whatever percentile. Does that happen?
There's a man we pay to say that. Yeah, his name is Rick Hill, and he's the policeman on the tech art side.
Wow.
Very, very much that side. But it's obvious a concern about polys, but If something's cool enough, we're going to make it happen.
You're going to fit and figure out a way. Yeah.
And it's also, there's also a give and take, you know, like cause the characters have a number of batches, right?
Yeah.
So if we need, you know, say more polys, it's like, okay, we can only have one batch. Okay. You know, but the tech artist, you know, Rick's our tech guru, right? He's to the tech end what I do with the art. Like I manage the art and direct it. He directs the tech when it comes to the art. So he and I work hand in hand. Only thing that I've never been able to get was the original Lunar New Year Jaina skin. She originally came with a fan, but she wasn't rigged to be able to do that, and it would have taken more time to do that, and it was like we're really trying not to change these heroes, their rigs, every time we come up with a skin. So
I told you hands are hard.
Yeah.
Hands
are hard from when you're drawing in junior high all the way up to when you're making video games.
We do have a larger budget for some of the legendary skins.
Yeah.
Like obviously, Tychus.
The Infested Tychus.
Yeah, Infested Tychus.
We teased the Murad Muradin up on stage, right?
Yeah.
Does he have a different one?
He's
got all kinds of new stuff.
Yeah, he's got like some different animations, like with his, is it the Stormbolt? He actually doesn't throw a hammer. His hammer opens up and he blasts.
Oh, nice.
Now, that's really quick. Most people probably wouldn't see that. But we've done things that were different with a lot of our legendary skins. That's where you can really say a Tychus has the, you know, drunken Zerg walk, whatever it is.
Oh, right.
Things like that. Yeah. And that's okay to do because it's only one thing. It's a one-time occurrence. Where the nice thing is we can use that rig again on Tychus if we want to. But there's certain characters, like even just Tychus and Raynor normally, we wanted to make versions of them without their marine suit. just because you're very limited to skin designs if you're always stuck to that Marine suit, right? It's something that I'm looking at personally for Morales. You know, she's in her medic suit. I'd love to get her out of that and have a skin with that someday where she's just, you know, in a non-medic outfit.
That way she's not like this when she's...
Yeah.
When she's riding on the motorcycle a lot of ways.
Well, all right. But you've been at Blizzard as long as anybody these days, and hasn't it always been a give and take between the artistry and the technical? It seems like, I just like your perspective on this, it seems like you guys have balanced that in a way that is admirable across the industry. It seems like it's the hard thing, because on the one hand, you've got incredible ideas and concepts and thoughts, and that can sometimes clash with the current state of whatever's possible on the broadest number of computers or consoles or whatever. Has that always been one of Blizzard's strengths, or has that been a thing that's just always a struggle and always will be, and to the end of time you'll always think that this should look cooler, but dang if the computer can't run it the way we need it to, or the engine can't handle it, or whatever?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've always been used to working in like with constraints, and I say that in a good way, because we used to work on Super Nintendo stuff. There was only so much you could have on a cartridge, right? So if you wanted to do this, well, you can't. You don't have enough room. It's like, okay, well, we kind of been able to live in that sort of thing. So then when we were doing PC games, it's like, well, yeah, we can do anything now. It's like, oh, well, you have all these other systems then that won't be able to play. It's like, okay, we'll just go back to the cartridge size.
Yeah.
It is difficult at times because it's like, well, this looks awesome. Have you checked it on low settings? It's like, oh, it looks like shit. You know, like, so there is a sort of a give and take, and that's why it's like trying to keep the heroes down to one batch, because then more, you know, you can it looks good on everything, right? Mm-hmm. And not relying too much on the, you know, the fancy stuff, which is great, but, you know, it doesn't work across all these different, the spectrum of the levels of computers that we're playing on. But when it comes with art and design, artists all think they're designers, and a lot of designers think they're artists. Mm-hmm. So, but I think Blizzard art and design, at least on our team, Team One, I'm sure it's like that with the rest of them, we all work pretty well together, because the main thing is, like, I'm a game artist. I'm not an artist where I'm gonna create this and it's gonna be the biggest Ragnaros you've ever seen. It's like, well, he's gotta be this big, can't be bigger than Cho'Gall.
Yeah.
Well, what if the spikes just stick out a little bit farther? Design. Alright, that's fine.
All of our initial meetings when we were coming up with these heroes, we're working designers and artists and engineers and our sound designers are all in the same room riffing off of each other, thinking about, oh, can we work this in? This is a big epic moment, or this is an awesome ability that we'd like to have. Like, what can we do there? So there's a lot of back and forth from the beginning. We recognize that the art is just as big of a draw to the game as the gameplay is, and in many ways the art makes the gameplay happen. We've gotten a lot of ideas as designers. We've gotten a lot of ideas from the artists, just as they get ideas from us on how these heroes are going to work.
Mm.
One of the things that comes up a lot, right, is silhouettes, and it's one of these things everybody seems to have an opinion on whether it's super important to have very noticeable immediate understanding of a silhouette for a character, or whether that's not actually that important. You know, Zool's going to do Zool things, but on that topic, you know, we have seen some skins start to step outside of the range. How aware, or how much on your mind is that when you're creating a new skin for a hero, of this needs to be recognizable versus, you know what, when he's sending out little minions, he'll figure out that soul.
It's absolutely fine. Important. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, though, because if, how many heroes we have? 50?
Yeah.
And each of them have how many skins now? 2 to 3 each?
Yeah.
Some more?
Some more, it's like, sure.
You know, you're gonna start to get to the gray areas. Like, remember old World of Warcraft? Everybody looked very unique, right?
Sure, sure.
But once you start getting to the different armor sets, like tier 4, tier 5, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, well, now they're in a dress and they got the giant shoulder pads. Is that a troll or a night elf?
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Oh, okay, the way he runs, now I can see it's a troll. Mm. So a lot of it depends on the animation, too. Mm. So if we can, that's why we don't want to change a lot of the animation as well, because some of it is very iconic. Some of them just have normal animations, like, you know, your normal guys running around, but some have super unique ones. Like, I mean, Tychus walks completely different than regular Tychus, but you know it's Tychus because, oh, he's got the big gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I doubt we'll ever give Tychus a tiny gun, right? I doubt we'll ever give Tracer a big old gun like that, right? Because that's Zarya. So we try to, as much as possible, and there's not like a real, you know, formula. It's just that feels good, that feels right, that feels, you know. So I'd be curious, just if you guys have the time, which ones do you think are sort of stepping on the...
Well,
on
the one that I actually... There's one I really like, but when I see him, he looks nothing like his normal self, and that's Arthas's... The Pandaria skin.
The Jade...
Yeah, the Jade Emperor, whatever it is. Yeah. That is so awesome and so unique, but I see it and go, I forgot who that is for a second. Now, if I'm playing him, obviously I've got his kit, I know what he's doing, his abilities are doing what they're supposed to be doing, but I... So it's not that big a deal, but that is the most removed, I think, of almost any of the skins. Also, that the Butcher one, the new Zerg Butcher.
Butcher list?
Yeah, that old man.
I love that one.
We
so
like
much.
That one a lot.
So there are some that you kind of stray a little bit more from to get the thing, but...
I kind of fall on the other side. I like when it strays. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like when a skin is too close to the thing... maybe sometimes some of the identity gets lost. So, I mean, the characters I tend to get excited about, when the Scarecrow Zool came out, I was thrilled. And I had friends saying, like, I don't know, it's going to be hard to tell that Zool. And I was like, what are you talking about? His minions have little masks
on
their face.
It's a corn prison.
Yes, it's a prison of corn.
I love those too.
I was very excited.
The more creative,
about it,
the better.
A lot of, like, he has a lot of big telegraphs, like, you know, the scythe going out and back the minions. Even the Arthas one, it's melee, and he's running around with the swirlies. Like, a lot of the guys, like Butcher, what is that guy?
Fresh meat.
Oh, it's the Butcher. You know, like, you know, you can tell a lot of things. So, again, the more that we go, the more difficult it will be, and there'll probably be some where it's like, oh, that one went too far.
Heroes also has the advantage of... Heroes is an extremely fast-paced game.
Mm-hmm.
Faster paced than a lot of other games in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, in some ways, slow enough that you have time to see the abilities and see the recognition, where I think silhouettes are a little bit more important for games like Overwatch, where not only can players change their heroes on any time that they want, you can't do that in Heroes of Storm, but also you need to... You need to be able to recognize that at a split second.
Yeah, you get a whole loading
and
screen.
And the drafting, too. Like, oh, he picked Zool, and then you say, what's... Oh, it's Zool.
Oh, yeah, no, that used to happen to us, because before... They've changed it now, so the UI now says who you are when you hover over him. But there was a time where I would see a certain helmet on Muradin, and I would think it was somebody else and go, oh, well, we don't need him. Don't pick him, and then realize, no, you picked the right guy. I just didn't know. Because the skin was weird, but that was more of a UI issue. I mean, I'm kind of with John. The weirder, the better in some cases, because you feel like you're almost playing something new for your money, even though you've got that character down. He's level 10 already, but now you're getting to do this whole new thing in Zool and the Halloween thing.
That's the goal, but we are selling these, so we want there to be something worth buying for everyone who buys it. Because I know there'll be people, we just, you know, throw on a different hat. Oh, I'll buy it. It's like, I don't want to do that. I want to at least, you know, do something that is worthy of a purchase, you know, because... And also, it's fun as an artist to create these things that, you know, oh, we'll tweak some of the spells on certain ones. Oh, we'll tweak the animations on certain ones. It's all, you know, it's all part of just making new characters out of existing characters. And now, you know, like, you see cosplay where people are coming as Countess Kerrigan. It's like, not even Kerrigan, it's Countess Kerrigan. It's like...
Oh yeah, I saw a lot of that today. A lot of people in skins. When you have a character like Ragnaros to bring it current, any hot ideas on what you're going to do to skin him up?
Hot ideas. Yep. Well,
I didn't actually mean the more hot thing, but
no, that was a good joke. That was fun, dude.
All right.
You own that. Yeah. Well, that's always a thing too, and like you saw at the end of the thing, the little baby Ragnaros
around, right?
It's a perfect example of one that would...
It would fit. Yeah, it didn't click with me at first, but I realized I was actually looking at some sort of skin job. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, that seems more challenging than, you know, Lee Ming can wear 1,000 things or
nothing.
Or nothing.
That's what everyone wants.
That's what they seem to want sometimes. But yeah, it's nice to see. It's nice to see these weird ones, because now I'm very curious how you guys are going to handle it. You know.
Well, we had one issue with a while ago with Abathur. It's like, what are we going to do with this guy? I put him in pajamas, make him a baby.
It's the best thing ever.
And it worked, right?
Yeah, so people love that.
I don't know how many of those would work. But, you know, that one was, probably one of the things that we changed the most, and people really like it.
Yeah,
so.
And it's the one you see. When I see a normal Abathur, I kind of go, who's that? Oh, that's without the pajamas. Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's naked. But that's, I mean, it's really not too difficult coming up with a lot of the skins, because a lot of these characters already have history. right? Yeah. So, you know, you could say like, oh, well, the Ragnaros, oh, what about little Rag, like the pet? Oh, okay, cool. Varian, what if we did this? What, you know, it's...
Have any ever been scrapped just because they think other players will find them distracting, or they'll see this very colorful thing come around their turn and go, oh, what's that, and then get murdered by the other four players? Like, is that ever a concern?
Usually get scrapped, not necessarily scrapped, but just gone through the meat grinder again to get reworked, if they're too similar to another one.
Mm.
You know, so we really got to make sure that we do things like that. Like, we had at one time with Varian, he had a color scheme. You know how you unlock your colors?
Mm-hmm.
That looked too much like the Prince Arthas.
Mm.
The Prince Arthas version with the blonde hair and the kind of purple.
Yeah.
So we edited those to make the colors different. But it was a guy with a big sword and shoulder pads and poofy hair. And, he had this purple and blonde. So it's like, is that Arthas? And again, that was one that we were able to easily fix, right?
Sure.
Like, so, but we've had a hundred of those that we've done. But scrapping skins, we have one that we've held off on, and we're still trying to figure out how to make it work, but that's the only one that I know of that we've kind of actually held back and haven't put out yet, even though it's all ready to go. We're just...
Do you want to tease what that is?
Yeah, what's that?
Do you want to tease what one that is?
Tease?
Yeah. Or say blatantly.
I would totally tell you. But,
yeah.
It's a more serious and tough skin than what this hero has normally.
Oh, I like that.
So it's only, you know, one of 50.
Yeah, that could be anything.
Because
they all kind of have that.
No, but you can look at it. You can look at it and probably pick it out. But, of course, I know who it is, so it's easy for me.
Nice.
See, he's let you in.
All right. There we go.
So
you're in the Blizzard circle of...
Yeah, I got one more about... I'm very curious about this. So one of the things that... We've talked about this on the show that we really like about Heroes is the art style, the engine, all of it provides a look to a lot of these iconic characters we've known forever, Thrall, Jaina, whoever, that is their best representation. Like, by far, the best-looking version of Thrall is Thrall from Heroes of the Storm, or whoever it may be. Does it ever just kind of get under your skin that you can't just across the board with, you know, Warcraft's older yet updated engine, any other place you see these characters, you just kind of want to make them all look rad like they look in Heroes now? Because they're beautiful in Heroes. And sometimes it's hard. You go back and look at, like, Rexxar, and wow, you're like, oh, you're like four polygons, buddy.
Uther in the Paladin artifact quest, and you're like, you're not Uther.
Yeah.
I've seen Uther. I've seen him as a lumberjack, as a matter of
fact.
Since
you have to look at that stuff, just from a, like, OCD artist perspective, does that stuff just, I don't know, does it bug you?
Not so much, because at one time, the Rexxar you're talking about from WoW, I assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was the best looking one we had compared to the one from War 3.
That's true.
And now Rexxar that we have is the best looking one. Who's going to build the next best Rexxar? The thing is it's like with, you know, we have the, we were talking about the artwork from previous, you know, Heroes we released. Now we have these new ones out that are awesome. We're going to update these. It's like, for a lot of reasons, we can't, but it's also better to just keep going forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If there's a hero we want to update, what's nice is we can always do it in a skin.
Yep.
So say, like, one of our older heroes that people say, oh, I wish you would redo it. It's like, well, when we do a skin for that hero, we can make it a little bit, you know, more up-to-date and all that. And if people really like it, maybe there's something we can do with it. But at least they have the newer version there that they can love and cherish, and then they can still love and cherish the, you know, the old-school black-and-white one with no sound from the 30s, you know?
Sure.
Like,
Yeah.
Well, this has been great.
Yeah,
thank you so much, you guys.
Absolutely.
It was awesome. And thank you so much for facilitating this and letting us in here.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us. This is Sam Braithwaite. And you do some really cool stuff on the team here. I'm excited to talk about Heroes in a big way today.
Yeah.
There was a lot of announcements about Heroes today, announcements that many of us didn't expect. I think the Varian Wrynn announcement came as a bit of a small expectation.
Yeah.
But as someone who focuses on the esports side of things,
yeah.
How do you see, let's start with this question, how do you see these two new characters fitting in? Because first of all, from a meta perspective, a character with two specs, or two potential specs, depending on talent build, is really unique and interesting, not just for Heroes, but in the MOBA strategy world in general. I don't know that I've ever heard of anything quite like this. And I know you can sort of artificially build multiple specs, depending on how you build your character, but this feels like a very specific, almost like Protection Warrior, Fury Warrior sort of choice. It also matches the lore really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that being implemented? I mean, on paper it sounds amazing, but I've heard from some players already saying, oh, I don't know, in practice that sounds weird. And how do you think that's going to affect the competition?
Yeah, so I mean, like, I think one of the things that makes Heroes unique in general is just the fact that you can kind of do that with a lot of different characters. With the way that the talent system is set up, you can really, it's like a choose-your-own-path adventure book depending on what's happening in the game. Now we're able to do that, what is it, six completely different play styles. And what we're going to be able to see is it being more of a flex position. So you'll see like the four core positions be picked. And so one of the things that is really interesting is that a lot of the different regions have different metas. So you play a lot of Heroes. When mm-hmm. Dahaka came out, mm-hmm. Dahaka was run a lot in China, and they did this double warrior lineup that was really successful. And then going into the Spring Championship, everybody kind of copied it. Summer, everybody was kind of copying that double warrior meta. What this allows people to do is to really kind of make your opponents not know whether or not you're going for that two warrior up front while you have your ranged assassins poking him in the back, or if that guy's going to switch, you know, literally level 10, level 4 to straight up damage and kind of roll with the flow of the game. It's going to be interesting. It's going to, I think, stress a lot of pro players out. Like, really, it's one of those things where it's like, how do you prepare for that? So like, you know, in the drafting process, it's like you're playing chess, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to throw people for a loop. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
Oh, so you say that with such pride.
Yeah, like, yes, I think that'll make to... it'll make it a little bit more exciting for viewers, for fans. I really hope it's one of those situations to where you never know which way it's going
to
be.
It does feel like a disruptor to the existing system, but not in a way that will potentially upset players. Just another factor they have to think about.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When I'm going up against a Varian Wrynn, I need to know kind of better where they're at and when they're at it so that I can react in a way. Do you see the potential for... We don't have to talk about new characters, but the idea of the existing base of characters, our existing roster, could any of their reworks potentially include something like splitting, creating talents that made them sort of a split spec, which, again, already happens naturally in a lot of ways, but maybe an overt, you know, conversion?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm in esports, not a designer, so I can only speculate, but I think it's safe to say that depending on how well received, you know, this is a completely new thing that we've never done before. It's I think we'll see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that it works for Varian because it's like part of his lore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like he is that badass, take your sword, split it into two, jump into an inferno, rip his skull open. We've mm-hmm. all seen that cinematic. That's mm-hmm. that's Varian. And so that's why it works so well with him as a character. I don't see us going down this path without that. You know, like, I think that's what makes Heroes cool, is that we stay true to the lore. Like, if you look at look at Ragnaros, he can turn into a giant thing and fight five people by himself. You know, the Lost Vikings split into three. Like, that's what makes Heroes unique, is that we defy those expectations that normal MOBAs have.
Yeah.
So, long answer to your question is yes, if it makes sense with the lore and the, you know, and all that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so speaking of having a MOBA that with features that no other MOBA has, last year when you released Cho'Gall, it felt very, I don't want to say gimmicky, but it was very much not a competitive type of character, it felt like, to be honest. It was more of getting players to play with each other and getting new players on board. This year, with Ragnaros, it's interesting because it feels like something that could be a very much a forefront thing in competitive matches that people use, because there's, you know, the ability to take over a structure at any given point in time makes it, you know, depends on where you jump into a fight with that person, like, this is the bad time to start it. So looking at that, is that something when they went to create new characters this time around, or at least in this reveal this year of BlizzCon, this is something that's brand new, something no other MOBA has, that still feels like it could be competitive? Was that something that
was kind of at the forefront this year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we always hope that all of the heroes that we create are going to be competitive. Chogall was actually picked at the last championship that we had, the World Championship. Chogall was picked.
That was really fun.
A year ago today, we saw Murky and Abathur get picked at the BlizzCon finals. Like, that's what makes heroes so cool, right? Is that there are these different opportunities. There's no real situation to where, you know, ideally, a hero is just not competitively viable. The goal is that given the circumstance, they will be. And I think that's what sets heroes up to be a really successful esport, is that we don't have those boundaries that the other MOBAs do, where, hey, we play on this map, and it's always this map, and it's always these mercenary camps, and it's always the same. It's static. But with heroes, we have 12 battlegrounds, we have all these different heroes. The viability of heroes on a competitive level is a lot cooler when you have these niche picks. So, like, another example I like to talk about is last year at the Summer Championship as well, Azmodan gets picked. He gets picked on Blackheart's Bay.
Oh, man.
Because that's where he shines.
Yep.
And that's something that no other MOBA can do, because they don't have those really cool synergies, those clutch picks. I'm down 2-0 in a series. How do I come back? Let's pick this secret strat that we have where we roll out Ragnaros on Towers of Doom and we make, you know, like...
Oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought
of
that.
Right? I mean, like...
So, I mean, one of the things with competitive play and even casual play is a lot of times there is a shift of momentum in the game where you feel like we're going to lose this because that fort is down. You now have a character that can literally embody that fort. But does it just, in the end, behave like a mule and temporarily extend the life of that fort and let you fight off some stuff? Or is the intent there to let a player not just withstand the damage and keep that fort alive, but to also wreak real havoc on the other team?
I think it's more set up in like a defensive position. You know, it's really there to kind of prevent that team from pushing. I think the goal is that you thwart them.
Yeah.
You treat them like the pest that they are, to quote Ragnaros himself. And then when that's done, you leave and you help and you continue down with your lane and you push. It adds in another... I think it opens up this potential of like a, hey, let's always bring the fight to us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with heroes, it's very much you want to get those key picks that are going to lead to you capturing objectives or boss fights. But this might open up some new strategies to maybe you want them to be coming into you, and that your setup, let's just, you know, this is me theory crafting. He's not in competitive play yet. But what if you kind of, you know, there's certain heroes that shine at level 20. Some games never even go to level 20 in Heroes, but there's certain characters that it's like, if you can get to level 17 or level 20 and get those talents, they become significantly more powerful. What if now we have that unlocked thing where you're able to maybe play a little bit safer, slow roll the game a bit to allow those characters to get there by setting up this defensive line and holding it at a fort? Mm. Like, it just opens up this new possibility that was never really there before.
It seems like a great way to stop snowballing. It seems like, or when you're in a match, not that a match is inherently snowballing, but if it is, you've got a new trick up your sleeve by putting him in a tower. This seems like a dumb question, but do you pass something like Ragnaros past some of the pro players and say, guys, just so you know, big fiery demon man coming, and he's going to inhabit a tower. Like, I wonder how that affects the pro scene. Every character obviously does. The meta shifts, things change, and people play the game differently. But whenever a Cho'Gall, a Lost Vikings, or now Ragnaros comes out, as much as I love it as a player, I just worry that the teams are going to go, we don't know what to do. We just ban him automatically? Like, there has to be a lot of thought that goes into that. What's the process there?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have our rules in place, which is, hey, a new hero comes out, it doesn't immediately get introduced to the competitive scene. Mm-hmm. Like, Samura was just released, but you won't see him at BlizzCon because we have him banned in the tournament because we weren't... It's
too early.
Yeah, it's too early, exactly. And so one of the cool things that lines up with all of these BlizzCon Heroes releases is that we have several months before next year kicks off. This is the end, and, you know, we have naturally an off season to where teams are able to compete, practice, and get ready for next year's competition. I'm not worried about it at all. Like, if the hero is very strong, we'll address it. If it's very weak, we'll address it. the overall goal is to make sure that it's a fun and fulfilling experience to play, and I think it'll fit that. Mm. If, like you said, that's one of the cool things about competitive play. If you don't like it, you can ban it. If you don't like it, you can ignore it. You can, you know, you can ban specific battlegrounds that you think it might shine on. If you're intimidated by it, you can straight up remove him from the pool in your banning process. There's ways to work around characters like that. Mm. But I think the hope is that it falls in that kind of that category of, yeah, he's picked. Not all the time, but he's picked enough to where you got to worry about him. There's a threat there. And I think that's what every MOBA character should be like. They have their place in a specific battleground or a specific lineup.
Let's talk about, you mentioned going into next year, you guys introduced some significant changes for the tournament structure and the league structure going into next year. Not just in Heroes, but across all of your games. How important was it for you, especially with a game like Heroes that is fairly young from a competitive standpoint, that we've seen a bit of instability with your tried-and-true organizations like Cloud9 kind of dipping in and dipping back out? How important was it to Blizzard to put a structure in place where you could start to stabilize this and provide the support to the players and the organizations to start growing this as a long-term esport?
Yeah, so these past couple of weeks, we made a lot of really exciting announcements for the HGC. So first and foremost, we're doing a league format for North America, Europe, China, and Korea, 8 teams. And they all follow that same uniform pattern where 33 weeks out of the year, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, HGC is going to be live, bringing you your best action from around the world. That right there, that stability, that regular occurrence, the actual broadcast hours, in January, we're going to be able to release the entire year schedule of HGC, including every single matchup, because it's a league. We have week one, we have this team versus this team. Week seven, we have this team versus this team. Us being able to plan that out is going to accomplish so much for the scene, because right now in North America and Europe, you face off in qualifiers that are open bracket. You don't always know who your opponent is. There's a huge difference between going into a matchup blind and having a month to prepare for a specific matchup. I know that I'm playing against Dignitas. I know that they do X, Y, and Z. We are going to be ready for that. Mm. And so what this is going to do, this is just going to increase the quality of play. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about Korean dominance in esports. Yeah. Well, Koreans have been having leagues forever. Yeah, like mm-hmm. It's just been an ongoing thing that's happened there. It's created that infrastructure that's bred the best of the best. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to duplicate across the board everywhere, is we want to create that stability and that foundation where players can be the best that they can be. And the way that we're able to achieve that is we're actually super, super proud that every HGC Pro team that competes from January to November will earn at least $100,000.
That's great.
Doesn't matter if you're first or last, guaranteed you'll get that amount of money if you just show up and play your games. That right there removes any issue that a player might have. We are taking care of them so that they can treat this like a job. They don't need to be worrying about other things. We want them to know, like, we're expecting a lot more. It's a league. They need to show up and play every single weekend. They have responsibilities. We need to take care of them so that they're able to do that, and they're able to put on the best damn show that they can.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what we're the most proud of, is that we're able to create this stability and this foundation. Next year is going to be badass, and then from there, it's just going to get better.
How many of those decisions also kind of go into the fan and the overall coverage experience? Like, obviously, we're a bit biased as folks who cover it as a sporting perspective, but in order for it to have long-term health, it has to go beyond just you guys creating this, what I'd say is artificial stability. It needs to also just be supported by the fact that you have fans who are starting to get invested in these teams long-term, that it's easier for them to follow, easier for it to be covered. Yeah. A lot of the lessons that traditional sports have learned, you guys are now starting to have to go through. Like, how much of that goes into the thought process when designing the league?
Absolutely. Everything. I came into this job as a fan first, so I've actually only been here for 6 months now.
Oh, wow.
And I had played thousands of games of Heroes. Mm. Love the game. Love the esport. Mm. It was really hard to follow. Mm. I had a hard time following what was happening in North America. I couldn't even begin to follow what was happening in any other region.
Mm. Yeah.
And the reason why is because there was no regular broadcasting. And not only that, it wasn't on the same location. One weekend it would be on one stream, the next weekend it would be on another stream, depending on which partner was doing which event.
Yeah.
There was no regularity to that. And so me coming in as a fan, I was like, well, first and foremost, we need to fix that. I need to know who's playing, when they're playing, and how I can watch it, always. And so that's why I'm super excited to say that in January we're able to release that entire schedule, because that is so important to building all of those fans, to giving them that regular routine that they can keep tuning into. The second thing is that another reason why information is hard to find is because it's spread out all over the place. We obviously have our Heroes Esports site right now, but most users find their information on, you know, Reddit or GoSu Gamers or Team Liquid. Sure. And even then, it's pretty hard to find. One of the things that we're really excited about as well, it's not out yet, but in the beginning of January, we'll be releasing the official HGC website. And what that's going to have is the results, standing, schedule, news, articles, as well as the VODs of every HGC Pro League region. So North America, Europe, China, and Korea, you'll be able to go to one website to find all of your information on everything you want right there. You could watch it live. You could watch VODs from the previous weekend. You could watch Korea's games last night. You could find out who's winning in the standings. Everything will be there.
That leads me to another question I've been wanting to ask that's related. one of the nice things about what they seem to be doing with Overwatch and their new structure and their plans with Overwatch League and so on is build and instill a sense of pride and almost local pride in your team. And we talk on Rally Point all the time about how one of the things esports seems to lack is this ability to have a team that you love. I'm from Salt Lake, so I like the Utah Jazz. These guys like the Mariners, I take it. Or you do.
Different sport.
But yeah, different sport, but yeah.
He tries.
No, Lakers. No. We like the Lakers here.
Yeah, you guys are Laker fans. Everybody, you know, whatever. Everyone's into hockey and the towns they're in that are big on hockey. So, but they have this kind of thing to get behind. Overwatch, even just this, the cup today has been nice because I'm rooting for countries that I know, and my French buddy can sit next to me and root for his team, even though they lost to Russia a little while ago. Is all of this, do you see this all heading in the same place for Heroes, where we can get to a place where we feel like we have more personal investment in the teams that we're following instead of just, well, I kind of like the name Cloud9, or I sort of think Dignitas is a cool name, or whatever?
Yeah, so obviously what Overwatch is doing is super exciting.
Yeah.
Like, that's great news for everybody. We're approaching it in a similar but different approach. One thing that I like to point out is, as of right now, the number one team in North America and the number one team in Europe have never competed this year. Mm. Not once have they faced off.
Right.
That's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Like, we can't begin to do city rivalries when we still can't even do national rivalries.
Right.
So next year, one of the things that we're doing, they're called clashes. We have Western clashes and we have Eastern clashes. There's two of each a year. So the Western clash, how it works is, after 5 weeks of league play in the beginning, we go to a Western clash, which is the top three teams in North America, the top three teams in Europe, the top team from Latin America, the top team from ANZ. They compete there for a cash prize, and then the next weekend, the Eastern clash happens. Top three teams in Korea, top three teams in China, top team in Southeast Asia, top team in Taiwan. What we're hoping to accomplish is exactly what we're talking about, is we want to build those rivalries. You know, you always see people talking about NA versus EU, who's better. We don't know. And I want to know. I want to be able to go to Europe and be like, what's up, guys? It's us, the champs. But we can't do that. One thing that's cool, though, 4 o'clock today, AA and Dignitas face off.
Oh, yeah.
Number one team from each region. Finally, at least it happens at BlizzCon.
Mm-hmm.
But it should happen more than just at BlizzCon. And so next year is all about building regional rivalries. We want to make NA and EU face off against each other regularly. We want Korea and China to be facing off against each other regularly. So that when we go to these global championships, we not only have these regional rivalries, but then there's also the who's the best in the world that you have to worry about. And so that's kind of the direction that we're going with our, exactly what you said, the storytelling, the following, how do you get invested into certain teams. We're viewing it on the regional front. We would love to get there one day, but I think what's best for Heroes right now is going this way.
Feels like the right step. Yeah.
Do you feel like that also will help with some of the problem we've seen in some of the other MOBAs specifically, where it's like Korean dominance and there's not a lot of exposure to playing these teams from other regions and seeing those other metas? Like, beyond just the rivalry aspect, there's just the concept of, like, there needs to be, you can only do so much with VODs and boot camps and that type of thing. And having these inter-region play tournaments, do you feel like that will also help level the regions a bit more, so when we get to tournaments like this, it doesn't end up just being a stomp?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the overall goal, is that this year we have three international tournaments. Next year there's going to be six. So we're pretty much doubling the amount of times where teams will be able to face off against each other. that, coupled with the fact that we're doing a league with regular broadcasting, teams only have to play one, maybe two series a weekend compared to grinding through qualifiers, going to regionals, and eventually landing at that. I totally think that we're going to see that gap close. It might take a year. let's just be honest right now. I think that next year we're going to see some good teams really start to emerge from outside of Korea.
Yeah.
But I still think Korea will no, I don't want to say dominate, but they'll always be the big dogs.
Sure. Yeah.
But looking forward to 2018, 2019, once this really people start to get used to it, people start to kind of go with it, the teams really start investing and doubling down, and we get coaches and analysts that are helping these guys in their regular league matches, we'll see that gap close. Who knows? Maybe it'll happen sooner than I expect, but we have to at least build the foundation so that they can do it.
I think that leads into a good final question is, where do you, this is all successful, your plan goes as expected, what does Heroes of the Storm's competitive scene look like going into 2018 if you guys have accomplished your goals?
Yeah, so I mean, if everything goes phenomenally, I don't know if it's 2018, but our eventual plan is that, I mean, it's an online league right now in North America and Europe. The next natural progression is getting the teams there playing live every single week. Mm-hmm. The next step after that is getting an audience. There's a lot that we can continue to do. Will that happen in 2018? We'll see. It would be great. We would love it, but we have to be realistic in what we're looking at. You know, it takes a lot to do that kind of stuff. And what we're doing next year is already incredibly ambitious and a huge step forward. And that's what we really need to focus on, is just kicking ass next year and putting on the best show possible so that we can make those things happen in the future.
Well, best of luck with all of it. It's super exciting. Yeah. I love the direction everything's going in, and it's obvious the team across the board, including you, everyone down to the last designer and artist, seem to be really putting their weight behind Heroes in a way that is making the player base very excited. So
2017 is going to be the year of Heroes. Yep. Like, you guys have only seen bits and pieces here at BlizzCon. Over the next year, we're going to have some pretty awesome stuff. We're all in. Like, we really, really believe in Heroes as a game. We believe in Heroes as an esport, and you guys will see that from us next year.
That's
for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Great to hear. Well, thank you.
Best rag NA.
Yeah, yeah, dude. HGC, 100,000 guaranteed right there. Awesome.
All right.
It's good to meet you guys.
Total pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Be a part of Core? Don't forget, go to frogpants.com/core, join the /frogpants channel in the game, email us core@heroesforyou.com, or call us 801-471-0462. Find us on Twitter @CoreHeroes. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.